Hi, my name is Beverly, and I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober. I'm nervous. I need to say that and get it out of the way. And I'd like to welcome the people that are new to Alcoholics Anonymous and let you know that the program works. It works one day at a time, and fortunately for me, it's been working since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, which was May 12, 1984. And I don't kid myself. I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm very grateful. I'd like to thank Lindsay for giving me this opportunity to come out and participate in my own recovery. Early on, they told me that any service I do, you know, eventually I would, you know, come to believe that it is a privilege as well as an honor. And today I believe that. You know, I used to like, no, mopping the floors is not a privilege. But today, any service I can do in Alcoholics Anonymous, anytime I'm asked to do anything, I'm very honored and I'm very grateful for that opportunity. And it doesn't take me long to reflect back when people weren't asking me to do anything. As a matter of fact, they were telling me to stay away. And so anytime, you know, I get to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm always grateful for that. I'm nervous. Where's my water? I found it. Thank you. Okay. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says we tell our story in a general way, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And as best I can, that's what I'll do. I'd like to thank the first two speakers and anybody that's celebrating anniversary, congratulations. I talk a lot about when I was a kid because it had a big effect on my life. You know, I'm the type of person that I learn from other people's behavior. And you don't necessarily have to tell me this is how it is, but I kind of picked things up when I was young, and that's what I did in my family. My father, according to the script description in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, he fits a lot of the categories as being an alcoholic. And where I got sober in I got sober at the Crenshaw Lotto Club and 9604 in South Central Los Angeles. And they used to tell us all the time that, you know, we're not really qualified to diagnose anybody else's disease but our own. But, you know, reading the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe that my father, you know, was an alcoholic. And my mother is in there also. My mother didn't drink, but she's, you know, they describe her in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what it says about my mother, it says that if you're with an alcoholic over any considerable period of time, you too will become neurotic. And that's, you know, that's my mother. And basically when I talk about the Big Book, I'm basically talking about the first 164 pages. And, you know, I was glad to know that that was in there because what it did for me is because my mother didn't drink and I couldn't understand what the problem was, you know, that gave me an out to look at the situation as maybe, you know, there's really something to this being a family disease. And I was able to look at my relationship inventory with my mother and then find forgiveness and able to go back and ask her to forgive me for the way that I had treated her because I was not, you know, I was not a nice person. My parents fought a lot, and their fighting bothered me. It bothered me a lot, you know. I have three brothers and three sisters. I'm the second to the oldest, and it seemed like it just took a big effect on me. It didn't seem to bother them like it did me. You know, I hated for my parents to fight, and my father was very brutal. He was what they used to talk about when I was new. They used to talk about it a lot as being hip, slick, and cool. He was one of those people that he dressed real sharp. You know, at any given moment, my father was always just, he was really sharp. He used to wear the zoot suits. And, you know, it was back in the 50s. Alcoholics Anonymous has made me look younger than what I actually am. So I was here in all of the 50s, really. And more of them than I care to admit. So my father used to put conch in his hair, and then he'd take his fingers and finger wave his hair, you know, and he would put on his little suit, and he would used to wear the tam and tilt it to the side, and he would have a tie, a hanky, and his socks and tam would all match, you know, and he would put on these Stacy Adams shoes, and he was cool. My father used to have this bottle twisted in his back hip pocket, And what I learned later is it was Silver Satin Bitter Lemon, which happens to be my first drink. As much as I didn't want to be like my father or my mother, I basically ended up just like them, you know. And my father was real cool, you know, he was real cool. He was the type of person that, he was the type of guy that I like, you know. I'm attracted to those guys that look real good on the outside and shallow on the inside. And, you know, the thing about the difference here in Alcoholics Anonymous is that, you know, the program has taught me to speak and keep going. I don't have to stop and take them home. You know, I could just say hello and just, you know, keep on going. And thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. But my father, you know, I didn't like my father when I was growing up. I didn't like my father. I didn't like what he did to my mother. I didn't like my mother. I didn't like myself, you know, and it was no secret that that I didn't like myself. I remember when they were fighting, the fight that really took the impact on my life was the night that my father whipped my mother with a razor strap, and he put a switchblade knife to her throat, and I was about 3 years old. I was supposed to be sleeping. I was at the top of the stairs peeping down because the noise would wake me up. I don't know how my other brother and sister would sleep through it, but, you know, in my own little way, I guess I was protecting my mother, and I would wake up, and I would look down the stairs. And when I saw this, I made a decision at that early age that I would never let a man hit me, you know, and I made that decision at age 3 or 4 years old. My mother wouldn't leave my father, and I didn't understand why until I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was more clear to me. And you know, the problems that I had with my parents, by the grace of God, I've been able to you know, to deal with them here in Alcoholics Anonymous. But my father was not really a nice guy. Everything about my family was, it was outer appearance, and they didn't tell me that, you know, Bev, when you grow up, always look good at any cost. But they showed me this, and like I said, I'm a person that, you know, I look at things and I catch on. And no matter how bad the situation was at home, my father and my mother always looked good, you know. And my father's disease had taken him to a state where he was no longer employable. I say no longer. I don't know if he ever worked. I can't remember. My father was a ladies' man, you know, and I'm assuming he didn't have time to work. I understand that today. I didn't understand it when I was a kid, but he was a charming type guy, and women, you know, they loved him, and he loved them, and he loved all of them, married or not, you know. I took my first drink when I was 16 years old. I was well overdue. I know after the effect of that drink, I knew that I should have had that a long time ago. I'm the type of person that I love the effect that produced by alcohol. You know, what happened is it took the pain of the past away. You know, my family life was very painful, and when I took that first drink, it all disappeared. You know, it all disappeared. And I didn't know. I was amazed that alcohol could take that type of pain away that I had settled within myself to live the rest of my life with this pain. And I took that one drink and it went away. And I knew I would drink. You know, there was no doubt about it. I didn't care about the demoralization that went along with drinking. And I suffered a lot of demoralization. Being a person that not having self-esteem or self-worth, it did register that I shouldn't behave the way that, or maybe I shouldn't drink because it's causing me to behave a certain way. Those things didn't register because I didn't care anything about myself. I remember when I had that first drink, this guy, you know, he brought 2/5 of Silver Satin Bitter Lemon with grape Kool-Aid, 2 packages of grape Kool-Aid. He gave me directions. I followed him. He said, take the grape Kool-Aid and open it and pour it in the bottle and shake it up. And it was about, I guess, about five or six of us. And he was the only guy. And I asked the other girls, did they want some? But it was only one of them that was like me. It was only one that was willing to kill herself along with me. And by the grace of God, she's sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, also today. And I marked the bottle because I wanted to make sure I got my share. Now, this is my first drink. This is my very first drink. I don't know the consequences of what will happen. You know, I don't have a clue, but yet I want to make sure that I get, you know, my just due. There's a problem right there. Had I known anything about the disease of alcoholism, I would have known that there was a problem even before I took the drink. Not once did I ask for glasses. You know, I didn't secure my surroundings. I wasn't at home. I didn't you know, I wasn't like, you know, who's going to take me home? Who's going to make sure I'm okay? Those type of things didn't enter my mind. And so what happened is I marked the bottle and I turned it up, you know, and I didn't ask what would happen or how would it make me feel. I just turned the bottle up. And when it got to the mark, my friend tapped me on the shoulder because I didn't even have what it take to turn the bottle down. You know, my life was so painful up to that point that it didn't even matter. No matter what, you know, no matter what happened would not have been any worse than the way my life was had me feeling already. So I didn't care, you know. Like I said, alcohol did for me, that first drink did for me what Alcoholics Anonymous is doing for me today. You know, and there was no way I was going to ever, you know, give up alcohol. I didn't have it in me. The thought to not drink never entered my mind. As a matter of fact, I made a decision that every chance I got that I would drink after that. And what happened that particular night should have been enough to keep me from drinking, but, you know, yet it wasn't. You know, I was in a fourplex on the corner, and I live like, I guess about three or four houses down the side street. And, you know, trying to make it home drunk, you know, I must have slept with Tom, Dick, and Harry. It didn't even cross my mind the next day. You know, I wasn't the type of person to come to and say, oh, my goodness, the neighbors are going to be talking. You know, I didn't care. I felt so bad about myself that those things didn't even enter my mind. But what did come to mind when I woke up or came to that day was the effect that alcohol had on me. I remembered forgetting the pain of the past. It took it completely away. And I knew that I would drink. I wasn't worried about the consequences. I didn't even care. I knew exactly what happened. I was the type of blackout drinker that piece by piece it would come back, and 3 or 4 days later I would get the whole picture. And it didn't bother me. I knew that I would drink. You know, alcohol took me places where I know today that by choice I would not go. You know, and one of those places is jail. You know, I'm not a jail person. I need to stress that. There are jail people and there are not jail people, and I'm not a jail person. You know, jail people, this is how I categorize this. Jail people are people that go to jail or, you know, do something and end up in jail, and they say to themselves, oh, well, I'm here. Let me make the best of it. I call those type of people jail people. I'm the type of person that go to jail, and I just do not want to be there. I am not content. It doesn't matter. I should not be here. And I just, the entire time, from the time I'm arrested to the time I get out, I cannot be content or satisfied with being there. And I keep telling myself all these different things and reasons why I shouldn't be there and how I'm not going to go back, because I'm just restless in jail. It's just, it's not a place for me. And I'm not a criminal. I think jail is for criminals. I'm an alcoholic, but then under the influence of alcohol, I have criminal behavior. And so the police treat me like a criminal, and they take me places, you know, where criminals are. And you know, my first experience being arrested, it was so painful that I can, you know, let me explain it to you. I was driving, you know, in my usual state of mind before sobriety, which was drunk, and by the grace of God, I haven't killed anybody or myself. And I was driving down the street, and I had an accident with the center divider. I was in L.A. on 120th in Vermont. I had this accident, and my car was not drivable once I hit this center divider. And so what happened is I opened the car door, and I fell out. And I, you know, not realizing that I was that drunk, you know, I tried to, you know, get up, and I looked in the car. I knew I couldn't drive it, so the thought came to me. It was nighttime. This was in the early 80s or late 70s. It was dark, and I knew I'd sit on the bus bench across the street and hitchhike home. Somebody will eventually come pick you up. And so this was my thought. I'm the type of alcoholic, if I think it, I have to hurry up and do it before I forget it. So I went across the street. I went across the street to sit on the bus bench, and as I went across the street, a car was coming, and I noticed the light, so I stopped in the middle of the street, and I flagged the car down, and it was the LAPD. And they took me directly to jail. But now, this is the first time I was in jail. Jail itself is not so bad if you could bypass the procedures. The procedures was what was humiliating for me. You know, the police took my hands. You know, they took them and they put the handcuffs on them. They actually locked them behind my back. I couldn't believe it. I mean, when they put that second that handcuff, when they put the second one on there, and you know, the thought came to me just as clear, it just went just as clear, you know, you were free up until now. You know, it never crossed my mind that I was taking my freedom for granted. You know, I didn't know I was free. I didn't even know that I was free. You know, they tried to get me to get in their car. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't totally willing, but I wasn't too hesitant. And, you know, I wanted to explain to them something, so I put my foot on the base of the car. You know, as they were trying to get me in the car, I put my foot on it. I said, well, wait a minute. You know, I stopped you. You didn't stop me. But what I learned from that experience is when you're drunk, you know, people don't want to hear what you have to say. You know, you know, it didn't matter. You know, they took me to where today I know is Silver Brand Institution. And I was humiliated enough, but their procedures weren't finished. You know, they got me in there and then they fingerprinted me. And they put my hands in that ink and they had me put my fingers on this paper. And then they took pictures of me. Now, I was the type of person, I picked up a lot of my father's habits. I was dressed real sharp. I was in a brand new car, but they wanted me to take a shower. I couldn't understand that because I was trying to explain to them I just left the house and I had taken a shower, but that's not what the procedure, that's not what they meant. They didn't want me to get clean. They wanted me to strip. And when I got wet in the shower, they bent me over and sprayed me. To me, that it was like an animal. That was the most humiliating thing that has ever happened to me from that day to as I stand here tonight. I have never been more humiliated. And I told myself, I said, I'll never, ever come back to jail and put myself in this position again. Never. And, of course, I was right back in there because I didn't know how I got there in the first place. You know, I never acknowledged that it was alcohol that caused me to be there, or maybe it had something to do with my drinking. I was clueless. So, of course, I was going to be right back in there. You know, and I got out of there. I stayed 7 hours in the holding tank, and they let me go on an OR. I was outside waiting for my ride, and I started thinking. You know, I just started thinking. I said, now these people are going to come and pick me up, and they're going to start asking me all these questions. And I needed a drink, you know, I needed a drink so that I could answer them when they asked me, why was I in there, what did I do, so that I could really tell them, you know, none of your business. And, you know, alcohol gave me courage, and I didn't have the courage to respond the appropriate way without alcohol. So I needed a drink, not knowing that it's the first one. I didn't know that. I learned that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that I was setting myself up to go right back to where I had been humiliated and disgraced, and I knew that I didn't want to be there. You know, but when I take a drink, I end up places I say I won't go. You know, I do things that I normally wouldn't do. With my disease, when I take a drink, I end up sleeping with people that on a sober basis I wouldn't even eat lunch with. You know, and so I ended up back in, you know, I took that drink, and in less than 30 days, I was right back in Civil Brand. This time, I was in there for attempted murder. I couldn't even stay 7 hours in the holding tank, and I set myself up to be there as I stand here tonight because my disease don't care. You know, I take a drink, and I cannot predict my future. And what happened with this is I was married, you know, my mother and my father, they, you know, by example, they taught me well because they didn't even know that my marriage was so screwed up. Everything looked good on the outside. And but I had separated for, you know, only God knows how many times this time. And what happened is my husband, he came over and somehow we got into it. Now, he, you know, I guess based on the descriptions in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, he has the disease also, and then I watched his progress, and I had a problem being an alcoholic because he was worse than me, and I kept comparing myself to him, and but this particular time, I'm, you know, giving him the benefit of the doubt, his disease progressed to the point where he wanted to hit me, and what happened is he hit me. We got into it, and he hit me. Now, I'm not normal or healthy, and I don't have normal or healthy thoughts. And so when he hit me, what I thought of, because this is what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, this is a healthy thought. If somebody hit you or do anything to you that's not acceptable, you tell them, this is not acceptable, or you call the police, or you leave. These are healthy thoughts. I didn't possess any. What happened is when he hit me, the tape started rolling. And it went all the way back to when I was 3 years old, sitting at the top of the stairs, and my father was beating my mother. And it reverted back to the time when he pulled the knife out on her, and the thoughts came to me, you better stop him. If you don't, you know, you're going to be your mother, and he's going to be your father. Now, you know, I had been drinking all that day, as I had done, you know, so often, because for years in my, before sobriety, I just stayed drunk. You know, I didn't know that, but I did. And this was no different. I was drunk, and, you know, he hit me and went to the bathroom, and I said, God, you know, if he come back and hit me again, I'm going to shoot him. And he came from the bathroom, and he hit me, and I shot him. Now, I was the type of person that I was very materialistic, because I used to think that the more stuff you get, the better of a person you are. So I had gotten a lot of stuff. You know, I had accumulated a lot of stuff, and everybody knew how important my stuff was, and don't mess up my stuff. And I didn't like nobody, you know, even my husband and my kids knew not to mess up my stuff, you know. And I had a lot of nice stuff. I had at this time it was in the mid-70s. I was living in a two-bedroom house in the Crenshaw District, and I had spent a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of energy and effort, you know, fixing the house up, and it was magazine laid. It was beautiful. I didn't have any friends. You just have to take my word for it. Nobody can verify it. Not even my husband, because he's an ex now, but I spent a lot of time, like I said, and money. I'm going to describe my house. In the kitchen, I had black shag carpet, and I had I know this was in the 70s, so I had a refrigerator with a stereo in the door, and in my bedroom, I had white shag carpet, and I had an orange suede bedroom suit in there. In the living room, I had a couch made. One of the major department stores made the couch, and a designer in the Wilshire District made the table for me. I had drapes and carpet to match, and I hand-painted and trimmed the walls to match the furniture. The car that I had the accident in that wasn't drivable, it was new before I tore it up. It had a hole in the roof when they first come out, and the interior in the car matched the furniture in the house. And I had all the right stuff. Now, my stuff was real important to me. My stuff and I were one. You know, that was it. Don't mess with my stuff. So what happened is that, you know, when I shot my husband and he was bleeding on my white shag carpet. I looked at him and I looked at the carpet and I put the gun to his head. I said, get up. You bleeding on the carpet. And I would be lying to you, but more important, I would be lying to myself if I paint the picture any different. I truly understood when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when they talk about losing the will to care. I totally identify with that. I didn't care about myself, and it was impossible for me to care about that husband or those kids, and I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, by the grace of God, he was different than I was. He had my disease, but he was a bit different. He knew how to care something about another person, because when the police was trying to get him to sign on a dotted line, and he told them, I can't do that. That's the mother of my kids. I cannot do that. And I thank God for him at that time, you know, because I know that, you know, the police, you know, they told me as they were taking me to jail, they said, you know, if we get a chance, we're going to just throw the book at you. And I had never been in trouble before. I didn't want to do that. I really didn't want to do that, you know, but I was driven by fear. And when I'm caught up in a corner, I do anything under the influence. I cannot think, you know, and so I just do whatever comes to mind, you know. And I couldn't tell the police or my husband at that time. I couldn't say, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just in so much fear and pain that I need help. And, you know, they didn't want to hear that no way, you know, not that I was willing to tell them. But I did eventually make amends to my ex-husband. That he won't let me see him. I had to do it through the mail, but I did it, and that's what was important. And I stayed just a mandatory 3 days in jail. And, you know, sometimes I think about it, I didn't get out and say, you know, wow, you know, you need to change your life, Bev. You're really going down. Those thoughts didn't cross my mind. You know, it was another 3 or 4 years I was hurting other people and myself before I was to find the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But by the grace of God, it was in His plans. It was in His plans. It's His will that I be sober and that I be here and that I experience this particular side of life, you know, and I'm real grateful for that. You know, I'm real grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I came here by way of 3 major surgeries in a 5-week period. I was down to 90 pounds and I was dying. And I knew I was dying. I was laying in the hospital bed as I went ready to go back for that 3rd surgery. And you know, I laid there. My stomach was swelling. I was turning dark. And, you know, I knew I was dying. And I said, you know, God, I'm ashamed to ask you. You know, I've said it so many times and I'm ashamed to ask you. But if you get me out of this, I'll change my life. You know, and I didn't have a clue how I would change my life. And at the time, like every other time, God always answered my prayers and came to my rescue. I don't know why I was so compelled to keep this particular commitment that I made to God, because the other ones, when I got up on my feet and got better or got okay, or the situation blew over, I forgot all about the promise to God. But this one, I was constantly convicted. You owe me. You owe me. And I don't know where that came from other than it was time, you know. And by the grace of God, I was able to understand that it was my time that I needed to surrender, you know. And I got out of the hospital, and I haven't had to go back at that period of time. I didn't go back. God, you know, took good care of me. And I was trying to go on with my life, but my conscience was bothering me because I knew, you know. And like I learned in here, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And, you know, what did I know? I had family members in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know where they were going. I didn't know what they were doing. I used to drink with my brother-in-law. I knew he wasn't drinking anymore, so I really wasn't interested in where he was going, you know, or what he was doing. And they're the ones that took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, my sister and my brother-in-law. And you know, it was May 12th, 1984 that I was coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, by the grace of God, here are some of the, I don't know if the first week or month or year or whatever, but some of the things that I heard, you know, this is the best step, Bev, you'll ever take from the cradle to the grave, is the day you stepped into Alcoholics Anonymous to take responsibility for your life. And that's not why I came in here, but that's exactly what happened. You know, they told me, they said, get in the, when you go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, sit in the front. Said, I don't care where you go and how many people are with you, there's always one seat in the front and you take it. And these are simple directions that was easy for me to understand and follow. They told me to get a copy of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that the program was outlined in the first 164 pages. And they told me to read it and go back over it and study it. If I had a problem reading it or studying it, to get somebody that have experience reading the book, and they would be glad to help me. I used to sit in a meeting and this lady would sit next to me, and she used to dictate when I was coming to meetings and when I was, you know, what. She was just dictating my life. And I used to say to myself, I don't think I asked her to be, I didn't ask her to be my sponsor, but the way she was carrying on, I couldn't remember, you know. And but for whatever reason, I wanted my life different. I followed her directions. You know, I followed the things she used to tell me. She'd look at her watch and she'd say, honey, tomorrow this time we're going to sit right here. And I'd be saying to myself, tomorrow this time I'm not going to be here. But I find myself right back there, sitting right there with her. And I did that for quite a while. You know, after about 6 months, you know, I told one of my friends who had 2 weeks or so more than I did, I said, well, I've been sober 6 months. I should be able to find a seat in here by myself. You know, she kept having me sit next to her. So my friend said, well, why don't you go let her know that you know, you can. So I didn't know, you know, so I went and told her, because I was a one-time newcomer. I came in by the grace of God. I hadn't heard anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know the rules or nothing. So I went and I told her, I said, well, you know, I've been sober 6 months. She said, well, yeah, 6 months and 2 days to be exact. And I said, well, you think I'm sober enough to find my seat by myself? She said, no. I said, well, how sober you have to be to find a seat by yourself? She said, when I tell you can find a seat, then you can find a seat. And I said, oh, okay. So they told me to, you know, that if I wanted to change my life, what I needed to do was to get involved with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and learn how to apply them and incorporate them in my life. And It took me about 9 months to concede to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And, you know, I heard things like, because I used to think that I had to keep up and catch up with my friends. And I heard things like, the race is not to the swift nor the strong, but the one that endures to the end. And these are the type of things. I said, I just have to stay sober. I don't have to be in a hurry to move on because I wanted to hurry up. I didn't really have a problem with step two because I understood that there was a level of insanity going on. And I never doubted that I was wrapped too tight. I never really had a problem with that. And so step two was pretty much okay. And I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, all into the church. And you know, I was preaching the church every chance I got to the podium. And this lady told me one day, she said, Bev, she said, if, you know, what you're talking about is fine. She said, except that I don't think you know what you're talking about. She said, but if God, you know, the way that you believe and the way that you talk, if all that is true, why are you in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, and I had to look at that. You know, I didn't understand that when they talk about, when they say higher power or God of your understanding, I didn't understand that it was so that if a person is new that we wouldn't, you know, prejudice them and interfere with their chance to recover. I'm just all into myself, you know, and I had to look at that. What happened is I changed my concept of God because the way that Alcoholics Anonymous makes it so widespread that it gave me new ideas about God. And so today, the God, you know, the power, the force in my life is just love. I don't have to define it. It motivates me. It's something that was in me regardless of how I behave. It's just maybe not activated until I got sober. And it's in everybody regardless of how a person act or what they, you know, what they're doing, and I can accept that. So the, you know, my higher power today is love. I did an inventory, and when I did this inventory, this lady that I read it to, she, when I finished reading it, she handed me two lists, and I asked her, I said, well, what's this? She said, well, Beverly, this is your your character defect list and your amends list. And I said, well, you know, my friends make their own list. And she looked at me like nobody has before or since. And she said, that may very well be true, Bev, but you're incapable of being honest with yourself. And I thought, wow, did she insult me? I wasn't sure because they said Alcoholics Anonymous had a new language, and I put that in the back. I said, if she insulted me, I'm going to get back at her later, you know, and but what happened is she was absolutely right. I looked at that amends list, and it had my father's name in the top three. I said, you misunderstood my inventory. I read you all that stuff. I told you what he did to me, and you made me make him an amends. I said, uh-uh. I said, you misunderstood. She said, I didn't misunderstand nothing. I said, well, you had to misunderstand. And so we went back and forth, and I was afraid that she would leave if I didn't cooperate, so I just kind of surrendered for the moment. And but she was absolutely right. She told me, she said, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and in here we deal with our side of the street. She said, your father is dead. This is 23 years after the fact. You're in a program of recovery, and you let him run your life from the grave. She said, if you want to be free, then you have to follow these directions. And free is exactly what I want it to be. And I followed the directions. My father died from the disease in 1977. It's my choice to believe that he died so that I could live here in Alcoholics Anonymous because he knew I didn't want any part of anything he had or that he was doing, and I was directed to write him a letter and explain how I felt about him, but before I close, make my amends. And I wrote the letter, and I was comparing what he did to me and how he ruined my life, and you know, it got to a point where I got so self-righteous, I started saying, you know, I'm an alcoholic, so that's not an excuse, because the worst thing I've ever done, and it was revealed to me, I had forgotten it. And I started crying. I said, God, you want me, I said, God, would you please, for these lights are throwing me off. I said, God, would you please forgive me? And a voice said, you want me to forgive you, but you're unwilling to forgive. And I made a bargain with God. I know that when I was new, they said, we don't bargain with God, but you know, out of desperation, I'll do anything. And I made a bargain with God that if he forgive me for what I had done, I would forgive my father. And, you know, that worked for me. And by the grace of God, that was the very thing that had me in such bondage. Me not knowing that that was a problem that had, you know, that carried over in every area of my life. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't expect to be set free from that. But that was the very thing that set me free, so that the ninth step set me free enough so that I could go on and participate in life. You know, my life has been good. You know, my life has been very good. I wouldn't trade my life today regardless of the things that have gone on, good or bad. You know, they're learning experiences, and by the grace of God, I've been able to go through it. And the things that I've gotten out of Alcoholics Anonymous are the things that I've so desperately desired all my life. And I couldn't stand on the corner and hang out with my friends and tell them I'm lacking it. But in Alcoholics Anonymous, you said, whatever you want, you can have if you're willing to work for it. And today I possess those things, and it's not the material stuff, because that didn't work. Self-esteem, self-respect, the ability to love myself and another person. And these are the things that I've always wanted, and I've gotten that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to tell you all I love you, not because you're alcoholics, just because, you know, I'm able to. And thank you for my life.